Disclaimer: the views expressed by our podcast guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or endorsements of our sponsors and advertisers. Similarly, our sponsors and advertisers do not necessarily endorse or support the views expressed by our podcast guest. The following episode is from a Dr. Mount special appearance on Calling All Beings, number 111, Off the Meter. This premiered on Wednesday, March 6, 2024. Check them out on YouTube at Calling All Beings.
We are Area 51 Coffee Company. Coffee for regular humans and coffee with twice the caffeine of a typical cup, with a buzz that's out of this world. Coffee connoisseurs from across the galaxy seek out our smooth brew with a hint of sweetness in a perfect roast. Area51CoffeeCo.com. You will also be assimilated with our Area 51 merchandise. We are invading Earth one cup at a time. We are Area 51 Coffee Company. Area51CoffeeCo.com.
Oh yeah! Welcome back to Calling All Beings. I'm your host, DJ, here on a Tuesday night. And let me tell you something. We got no Dr. Jeff Kripal. We got no Money Man. But I'll tell you what we do have. We got a study of UAPs, the co-host of this joint, one of the original gangsters. And that is Debs. Good evening, Debs.
Why'd you tell everyone about my gangster lifestyle? Now the secret is out.
I'm sorry. I should have kept it on the DL. And you know what we found out last time, Deb, after our last show, is that we have a volleyball gangster up in here raking people in the grill and doing all kinds of craziness up at the net. And I'll tell you what, she's an academician herself. She's working on that PhD. And I'll tell you what, she's kind of a regular up in this joint. And that is Courtney Marcassani.
Hi,
did I get it? Yeah, man.
With the crew.
And now back for a second appearance, not just for a question or two, not just to pump his show, All Things Unexplained, but that is my man from North Carolina who right now is visiting us from Roswell, who shows that he's in the game. He's just not playing with you people. He's spending his money to go out and do some investigation. And that is my man, the host of All Things Unexplained, aforementioned, Dr. Tim Mounts.
Thanks so much. So I'm really trying to up my UFO street cred. I am broadcasting live from Roswell, New Mexico right now. So shout out to Stellar Coffee Company, where I'm at right now, right in the heart of downtown Roswell, for hosting me. And also one more shout out to the International UFO Museum and Research Institute here in Roswell. They were really gracious and kind to me today. Let me do a lot of research, and I really appreciate them. So much. So good to be back. Thanks, everybody.
And Tim, do you attribute that to your body fat content or the hairdo? Why do you think that they've been so welcoming?
I attribute it to the ma'ams and sirs I were tossing around, like, okay, just like free, like, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. Like, here's your free ma'am, here's your free sir. And it's just like, hey, whatever you want, it's yours. Let's do this.
So it's not the veins in Tim's bicep, and it's not his cowboy boots, which I saw when I went and visited with him. They're awesome. But yeah, it's just his overall personality and Southern charm. Mississippi's own former educator and current, I guess, college administrator of some sort. It's top secret, though. We can't talk about it. Anyway.
That's right.
You know what? I have to comment about how amazing that research area is in that museum, though. It is file after file after file. Like, they're organized by who it comes from. It is amazing stuff. Very exciting.
I'll give you a great example. So I wanted to know if they had anything on Art Campbell, because I picked up a great book called Finding the UFO Crash at San Augustine, and it's by one Art Campbell. And I need to know more about Art Campbell. And just a few button clicks, she's like, okay, let me go pull some files. And she brings back this file of 1970s and 80s UFO magazines with Art Campbell in them somewhere. So I thought that was pretty amazing.
Good stuff, Tim. I'm glad they're treating you well. We're going to want to hear tomorrow after you go out in the field with unknown persons. But before we get into all that, you know what? Let me hand it over to Deb to throw some topics, and then we'll go to Courtney, and then we'll go to Tim. So go ahead, Deb, man. What's going down? What's on your mind?
Okay. So the thing that's on my mind right now is that there's this kind of feeling of, I don't want to say stagnation, but concern that
but stagnation.
Yeah. Okay. So there's concern, and if you see, like, I'm not on social media as much as I was. I'm kind of taking a step back for a little bit, but I've noticed that most of the posts that are from the UFO community have turned into something else. They're on other topics right now. So I feel like until something else happens, like, a lot of people are just kind of waiting, and I guess I'm one of them. So I don't know how everyone else feels about that, but I just wanted to throw that out there. The overall feel of the community has shifted a little bit. So
who wrote that song, Courtney, Waiting on the World to Change? I don't know.
I don't know. That's not coming to mind. I remember the song. I remember how it goes, but I don't
know. Waiting on the world to change.
There you go, Tim. He's from near Elvis Presley. All right, go ahead.
All right. Elvis the singer? Was he the one that first sang it?
No. It's a much, much, much more recent song. It just so happens that Tim is from Mississippi, and who knows, maybe he's not far from Tupelo, where Elvis is from. But anyway, I digress. Please, waiting for something, do you feel like this is a malaise, Courtney? What do you feel like the state of as Nathan called it, the state of the onion is right now?
Yeah, I feel that Deb has just got her finger on the pulse. She's picking up what everybody else is feeling, which is this anticlimactic thing since the hearing, that we're all waiting for, you know, the next hearing or the next big move to happen. And we're all being told there's this still water right under the undercurrent, but there's really big stuff happening. But I think back to when I started getting into this back in, 2015 and 16, and there wasn't really anything going on. So I'm like, this is actually pretty big stuff. So I know there's going to be more big stuff. And I keep thinking about how we always kept hearing something big's going to drop, something big's going to drop. And you always just felt like it was nothing. So I think that this time that we're in right now is actually pretty exciting. And I think there's more. I think there's more coming. I'm sure we're going to talk about it. I was disappointed to see Sean Kilpatrick's article in Scientific American, because he's just
not scientific.
He's just so negative, and he just negates the whole body of evidence that's been given. And so I am disappointed with that today. Yes. Very crestfallen.
Oh, I love that word. That is ding. Courtney, when the best word of the show is crestfallen, I love it.
I have to say, I have to throw out there that Jeremy Corbell did say that something with Crush is going to come that's bigger than the OPED. And I just feel like that's still a lot going on one person. I would like other people to come out. And that's one of the things I'm waiting for. But I want to hear other people's opinions, of course.
Oped to me sounds like moped, but without the M. I'm sorry. I guess that's not worthy of commentary.
Or moped.
I thought that was pretty good.
Moped. We moped.
Don't need no funny. Tesla to impress her.
Deb, man, this is a stitch back to someone trying to teach you to say, was it Jeff teaching you to say Cade Patamen? So it was lovely. I'm sorry. All right. I'm going to try to get serious here and talk UFOs, because I'm having too much fun and it's just uncalled for. We have so many, illusions in that Jeremy and George are always alluding to the next thing is going to happen. You know, it's quite possible that it is. It's kind of like the phenomenon where it's not going to happen on a timeline that is necessarily acceptable to us. And boy, Debs, we had conversations about this way back when Grush came out, is that we're waiting for someone to come along and offer not only moral support, but to support his argument and his assertions with some of their own. So they threw out those, you know, those little, you know, they sort of threw out those daggers there as far as alluding to a mental health crisis that basically just happened because his friend died. And that he's autistic. And, you know, like, I'm like, wait a minute, what's the problem with his testimony? I'm missing it. Because he was able to maintain a TSSCI clearance with SBI and multiple polygraphs, and was, you know, had access, could have been read into, you know, something like 3,000 programs. So, so yeah, obviously they didn't think it was enough of an issue to read him out and send him on his way. But obviously it was enough to scare other people from wanting to do the same, because they know if you have something in your background. So Bob Lazar comes to mind, right? Oh, okay. Strip club, you know, the guy, you know, this is an engineer and on his own time likes to go to a strip club and see girls and maybe get lap dances. Oh my God. He obviously, you know, that person. Well, but there may be individuals that don't want that information in the public sector, and that's what would happen if they came forward. So that's my take. Tim, have you gone yet? Go ahead, sir.
I have not gone. So I'm actually going to address this from a different point of view when it's my turn. But I do feel like there is a general sense of apathy in society right now. And I don't really know how that's going to change or what it's going to take. And I'll give you a great example. So you have someone like Diana Pastulka, right? She's literally as high level of an academic as you could get. And we just had her on our show. But as respected of as an academic as you can get, she literally says, hey, someone from the government took me and this other scientist from Stanford out in the desert of New Mexico, somewhere, maybe the plains of San Augustine, and we dug up parts from a UFO crash retrieval site. General society, general population doesn't even blink an eye at this. And I think that's pretty telling, because, you know, you can't really get more of a bona fide witness than Diana Pastulka. And so what is it going to take to make people blink an eye? You know, I've heard this theory that people are becoming one with technology, like we're merging with technology, and it's causing us to really, you know, just to lose sense of our surroundings and really not even care. So I don't know what it's going to take, but I feel you. I think there's a lot of apathy out there.
You know what I keep remembering? I keep remembering when Lou said, if you have other hobbies, go for them.
Get a hobby.
For 5 years.
I think is the quote, go get a hobby and come back.
Right. And I'm like, you know what? I am doing that right now. I'm going to sit back and wait, because I think putting pressure on certain people isn't going to benefit us with this topic, right? It's not going to make it go faster. And it is a slow bureaucratic process happening behind the scenes. But regarding the apathy issue, you know, I think that is an overall issue. I think as a mental health professional, I see a lot of children, for instance, are really suffering still from having gone through that pandemic. And it's just been an overall ripple effect. So, you know, on the one hand, we're just like normalizing this conversation in society. The NHI conversation is kind of normalized at this point for some people. And then on the other hand, people are like, yeah, but I just got to trudge through life right now. We need like some sunshine or something to make everyone just feel better and more excited about the universe.
Courtney, what do you think? Tim mentioned AI. I would love to, you know, do a whole round on that, but without setting any sort of a table. What's your thoughts, ma'am?
I could just drop something huge right now. And I think I probably will, just because, you know, this is only my second appearance on Calling All Beings, so I might as well just go ahead and shake it up. But, you know, I know people in Silicon Valley who are in that world. And I did hear just yesterday. And this is just so incredible that there is a, there's a guy out in Silicon Valley who he won a Nobel, and he's developing a chip, an organic chip, to merge with AI. And it goes beyond, you know, Neuralink and what Elon has done. So I think that that is a sobering, I think that is a sobering thing if true. I mean, they're getting the money behind it right now. And the interesting or novel part of it that I thought was important for research is that because these chips are, you know, so going to be so scarce, right, because of mining and getting them and the power that's required to use them for something like Neuralink, they're looking at other options like this organic type of chip. Now, I don't know how it works, and I want to know more, but I know that it's going in that direction, and that the progenitor of the whole thing, his philosophy is, you know, mankind 2.0. And so I think that my own opinion is, like, I want to have personal sovereignty over my body and not be necessarily pushed into that whole world. But I know it's going that way. And that scares me. It actually scares the heck out of me. And I'm all for technology. But if that gets developed, I think it's going to bring a whole bunch of questions for humanity about AI and merging with it.
That was going to be my next question, was just that. You already kind of answered it, but I'll probably dig a little bit. But let me say hello. Oh, okay. My wife's saying, stop clapping. I need to sleep. Okay. I want to say hello to Lou. Lou, how's it going, brother? We haven't spoke to you in a long time, but I hope you and Jennifer and the kids are doing really well. So glad. Thank you for tuning in, as well as everybody else tuning in to Cab. William from Scotland, what's up, brother? Just to let you know, William, coming up, we're having an England, Ireland, Scotland roundtable on a Saturday. I believe it's April 3rd. So tune in for that. I think you know who will be representing Scotland, Andy McGrillin, but we're also going to have Rob Sheridan from Ireland, and we're going to have a panoply of British brothers and sisters. So, but Courtney, yeah, I did study that, like my final year when I graduated with my bachelor's, which was not all that long ago. I put AI as one of the things I wanted to study. And I went to a lot of thought leaders, from Elon to Jan Tallinn, who, developed Skype. And there were several others that the names are probably escaping me now. I'm sure I have them in the papers in my archives, what I wrote about it, but, some of them were at Georgia Institute of Technology, where, you know, they had taught. I think it was a Navy DARPA project, ironically something Debs and I were talking about earlier, where they wanted to teach two robots to be able to fool one another, to play hide and seek. And so the deceptive aspect of it scared the professor that was teaching it, and they wrote an article in one of the engineering magazines about it. Because he said, well, what, how do you know that your personal robot won't decide to do something like that? So I thought it was kind of frightening. So listening with bated breath, yeah. Lou said, well, we're not going to say nothing crazy. I might.
I could go on and on about the AI technology that's coming out, but I just really like to point out to people that this is not new stuff. DARPA worked on it at least 6 years ago. Back in the day, they didn't use the small devices like they're doing now, which, by the way, was kind of a copy from a competitor for Neuralink. Just got to throw that out there. They used an attachment, right? And that's how they used the brain computer interface. So the thing like putting chips inside our body and all that, that's not new technology. And if anyone researches it for just a few minutes, they're going to find out it's older than they think. And that means that it's further along than we think.
Hey, so. Deb, I would like to ask you, and then I'm going to go to Tim on this. I know this isn't UFO centric, so forgive me, everybody. We'll try to dial it back into UFOs. And there is, you know, there because Dr. Kreipel, who was going to be our guest tonight, actually did speak about that. And he's going to be on with us, by the way, April 8th. So Monday, April 8th, Dr. Kreipel will join us. But he's in Texas, in Dallas this weekend, or this week. So Deb, is there something about AI that you fear? What are your personal feelings about the possibilities of a developed sort of strong AI or AGI?
Well, personally, I don't fear it. I find it fascinating. I love to explore what's going on. Like, robots is one of those hobbies I was talking about when I said, you know, looking at other hobbies. Believe it or not, I have a whole closet full of robots. So I would like to see improvements and development. I made a chatbot back in the day, so I understand what's going on with the large language models. But what's happening is they're evolving it to something else. In fact, the most recent one was the one that can create videos. And it basically, you give it some text commands and it creates actual videos. The thing is, though, and I'll just throw out, I don't want to like give away too much about some of this research just yet, but I'll just throw out, if you combine what they're doing with AI with a whole bunch of companies together, and then combine what they're doing with something where they're trying to replicate the human brain with computers, and you put those two together, you're going to see something that thinks a lot faster than us, has a lot more information than us. And if they do improve, they've talked about improving the energy power source for these things, right? It's going to be like a human with a bajillion memories. Okay, so if that could scare some people, I won't lie, that might be scary. The only thing that really does scare me about it, though, is the fact that they want to weaponize it. They always want to weaponize these things. And they already have autonomous drones. They're already working on swarms of drones that work together that are AI. So that's the scary part. I'm not appreciating that. I appreciate us not wanting to lose service people. I get it. But it's just kind of scary because that could go wrong. It could go very wrong. Very Skynet.
So you said you don't fear it, Debs, but to be fair, the list of things that scare you we have so far are ghosts in restaurant bathrooms and I can't think of anything else.
Weaponized drones.
So you're not really the right person to ask this. Let me go to somebody who may have a real fear, who shares in the fears of Courtney and I, someone we can commiserate here with, in Dr. Tim Mounts.
So I do fear what Courtney was talking about. I think it's really disturbing. I'll give you a little teaser into some things that CJ and I have been looking into. Some people believe that, you know, Diana Pasulka has said that, you know, these crashes are perhaps gifts or donations. Okay, well, the implication here is, all right, they gave us technology. What did we give them? And did we give them the green light for abductions? And if you look into the abduction phenomenon and biotechnology, we literally have advanced biotechnology that was first derived from space with no other explanation. Okay, there's some disturbing trends here. And I was reminded that indeed these implants have been around a lot longer than we've known about. As I was touring the UFO Research Museum today, sure enough, how long have people been getting abducted and coming back and telling stories of implants in their bodies? So this is a scary phenomenon. I think it's a mighty big coincidence that we are seeing evolving technology with implants and AI and all this other biotech. And is there a link between the abduction phenomenon and UFO crash retrievals? I don't know, but I'm afraid we're going to find out.
Can I throw out something?
You know, one thing I know about my friend Tim is he hates conspiracy theories. Hates them. Right now, I'm just kidding. Okay, so let's dive right into this then, Deb, if you don't mind. Staff Sergeant Dan Sherman,
okay,
and his book Way Above Black. And so if anybody out there is looking for it, it's on Goodreads. I think it's like $7 or something on Goodreads. The book is 60 pages. So, you know, Tim could probably read that while he's in the shower. That few pages, right? But what I want to talk about is that supposedly there was a program with the USAF and the NSA to train people to communicate with the phenomenon. And I hate to spoil the book for you, but the actual purpose of it is more important than keeping it a secret, because really you would want to read it to get the details about how he got into the program, why he showed up at Elant School and then at Fort Meade and then so on and so forth. And says that he was trained to communicate with ETs. He eventually figured out that there were abductions involved in this. At least that's what he thought, or that's what he was led to believe, because he was being given coordinates by the entity he was intuitively communicating with. The computer terminal that he was using, now think like 1992 for a time frame of where computers were at there, was that sort of technology, and there was a box that would appear on his screen, and what he was given intuitively, a set of / numbers, and then more / at the end of the communication. He would type that into a window. He didn't know where that information was going, and he won't even offer a guess as to where it was going. But he believed that they were coordinates, and I guess his communication with the entity had something to do with abductions. So who goes? So let's go to Deb and then go to Courtney and back to Tim, please.
It's interesting because it sort of ties into what I was going to comment on. I was going to say that some people say that the entities are AI, right? That they are some kind of biogenetic AI, and which would make sense, because if you're like a species, you'd probably want to send that. We would. We're working on that right now, by the way. We're trying to make robots to send into space. Mm-hmm. And if they're using like electromagnetic technology and all that, so it just kind of goes in line. This is a very technological connection. As far as like the abductions, you know, it's so weird. The thought that went through my head was, how many did we abduct? Like, you know, like how many have we taken and kept?
Great point.
And like humanity has abducted many, many people, right? So we're so judgy about this, but we do this. Like I watched documentary after documentary, one of my other hobbies, about people doing these kinds of things and people going after them. So I don't know. I think there's a lot to think about with that. I don't approve of abducting. Obviously, it's not a good thing at all. It's damaging. It's traumatic. There's other ways if you want to interact with humanity that would be better. I don't know. That's my 2 cents on that.
I just want to say hi, Av, and welcome back. We haven't seen you in a little bit, but welcome back to the cab. Welcome, Insectoid, and Shelly. Welcome. Yeah, and it also, I want to throw out there before I give it to you, Courtney, that I hadn't shared this with you. I thought I was supposed to share it with you last week, but the alien interview that was done, it was allegedly filmed in 1991 out at the Area 51 site at S4, supposedly. And I watched that the way it was filmed, and I watched Victor, and I believe that's a legitimate, absolutely a legitimate, interview with an alien. I believe Victor's legitimate, but anyway, take it away, Courtney, on anything that you want to discuss about that.
Well, was that the Inside Edition one that I mentioned? I mentioned an Inside Edition video that was leaked, and it had the Navy
yes.
thing across the bottom. Okay. I just wanted to get clarity if it was the same video. Ma'am. So when I heard this, you know, this new chip that's organic, right? The first thing I thought of, I just wanted to validate Dr. Mounts, because the first thing that went through my mind intuitively, I was thinking, is this connected to implants? You know, it was such a like aberrant thought that came into my mind. It was so far afield of what was actually being talked about in that context. I thought that was an interesting thought. And I'm not conspiracy minded either. I want to find facts and fact patterns that, you know, go and make evidence that you have evidence when you don't really have it, or, you know, historical evidence and documentation of things. So when he said it to me, I thought, oh, I wonder if this explains telepathy. I wonder if it explains some of the psi and the precognitions and some of that. I have never conceived that these actual psi abilities might have been related to that. I never considered it, but I absolutely considered it when he said it. It was like my first thought. So yeah, it has been around a long time, Deb. And I wonder, were some of those metals, right, you know, the Dr. Lear stuff, which we saw, you know, patients having metals being taken out. I wonder if some of that wasn't repurposed and given to DARPA. I don't know. It's just a thought. I think the second thing about the Dan Sherman story that is so profound is how his mom was identified before he went into the recruitment. So there was also recruitment because he was an experiencer and it was a genetic thing. And so that's another thing that stands out to me about his story is that there's recruiting going on. And, you know, Kit Green talks about this. He talked about it in Third Eye Spies, that there was a recruitment program and they can't get away with doing that today, what they did back then. And I actually contacted the filmmaker and I was like, what exactly was he talking about in those army recruitments and how are they recruiting, you know, the Psy spies? So that's another thing that comes to mind when we think about Dan Sherman and how he got recruited. And I guess the third thing would be is this was brought up to me and it's another thing I never conceived of about possible implants is the eminent domain. You know, that was taken out of the NDAA there at the end before it was signed and went through. And it never occurred to me that people who had actually had implants that were taken out, you know, that's eminent domain as well. So if all that metal was taken out and ended up somewhere else, you know, that's a patient's actual metal that right. could be studied either by their doctor or for patient, you know, health, especially with anomalous health incidences. So I think there's a lot connected with this, with AI and all of it. And I think that we're just seeing little pieces of it emerging. And it's up to us really to try to figure it out. But I think it's very difficult to try to get the whole picture, obviously.
Yeah. And I had a discussion with a future guest also coming on is Bob Pliskin on Twitter. You guys know him as Sean Munger. He's former Marine Corps intel. He is a lawyer, a government lawyer, got himself through law school later on in life. Just an absolute tiger for disclosure and as an advocate. And we talked about whether or not that was a lark putting that eminent domain clause in there. I don't know that anybody can quite say, but it seems like a lark to me. It seems like you would put that in there if you didn't want it to pass, because anybody with even the slightest, most rudimentary knowledge of the climate, the socio-political climate of the United States would know that that's a non-starter. So you wouldn't put that in there if you wanted the legislation to pass. You can surmise about it, but that's all I'll say about that. But I did want to ask you one follow-up, Courtney, before we go to Tim. And relative to AI, is it fair that we could assume that an intelligence such that visits the planet is far more advanced in AI than we are in 2024? Would you agree with that?
Here's the part about it where I always go back to the six-layer model, that paper about incommensurability that Jacques Vallée wrote.
We're back to the dip again with the corn chips and sour cream.
It's one of my favorite cornerstone papers to go back to because they lay stuff out there about the whole anthropomorphizing, you know, this machine or the AI models that are being used. I think that we make that leap. We make that leap that it's advanced. We make that jump that it's advanced. I think you have to go back to the military witnesses. That's always what I do, is they're saying it's advanced. Now, there's this whole new thing coming out that the Tic Tac at the Nimitz was our tech, right? I mean, did you guys see that? It just came out this week, though, that they're challenging some of the witness testimony saying that. But the point is, they're saying it's so far advanced. Right. And so I always have trouble with that, reconciling, you know, obviously associating, you know, the AI with being so advanced.
There are several reasons why that. So first of all, people that had inside knowledge that did all the investigation on that, one of them is in the chat, Lou Elizondo, said that it wasn't our tech. Christopher Mellon, who was pretty low position, undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, which is just below the cabinet level. Then you have David Fravor, who Jeremy Corbell, I sent these guys on the cab chat. It's an interview that Jeremy Corbell did where someone was trying to assert to Dave Fravor that it could be our technology. And Dave said, yeah. Not only was he a witness to the event and got in a dogfight and the craft literally disappeared in front of him, Literally. That's what Alex Dietrich told us. It didn't zoom away. It disappeared. So that's A. B is, he said, if you knew the position I hold right now, you wouldn't try to sell me that. So there is not, and with my knowledge of flight, there is no, you would have to have a very, very significant witness convince me that that's our technology, which would take me in, you know, 45 minutes that I'm not going to waste on this show because no one really cares about aviation and aerospace, but that's not our tech. And I would, someone that says it is, I'll bet my life against theirs. That's how sure I am that that's not.
Well, right.
I'm
glad you rebutted, because one of the things that I always say was, look, the things were raining down. They showed up at the, you know, at the rendezvous point that wasn't even discussed. It had, you know, some kind of advanced knowledge of where they were going to be. So yes, I do think so, because those different facts show that it's obviously way more advanced than we.
That was actually though my preparatory question, which I got to give to Tim because he'll never talk to me again if I don't get him in this conversation. So I'm going to have to come back to you. But the reason I asked about the AI is what I was going to say to you. So maybe what I'll do is I'll ask you this, Tim, and then I'll just ask everybody to react to this. And then I'll just, you know, just turn everybody loose so that you could just talk about whatever you feel like, because that's what you should be doing anyway. What do you think AI can't do, Tim?
Well, do you mean our AI or do you mean the phenomenon?
I mean, from what we know, because we can only surmise, you know, I think our leaders in tech have better projections of where we can take it than where we're just guessing, having fun talking about what they might be able to do with it.
I'll put it this way. I've been told by someone who works in that realm that we would be truly shocked if we knew what the military and others had the capability of doing. And he gave an example of this. This is a reality, that they do have the AI that, if you remember the old X-Men cartoon from the 90s, and they had the training room, right, where they would go in and it would simulate battles for the X-Men. I'm trying to remember what they called that. Well, imagine walking into a facility, right, and you open the door and you walk in and you see an experience, whatever is programmed to be inside of there, everything in three dimensions with the other people. You know, it came out the other day. Oh, and similar to the holodeck, right, on Star Trek. We can do that now. That's what I've been told. It came out in public the other day that the AI can analyze the wireless signals in any facility and literally determine the people that are in there and all their postures and locations in the room based on
how the wireless. Well, I was in Down Dog a little while ago. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Based on how the wireless signals are moving and bouncing around the room. That was revealed to the public. So to answer your question, I'm not sure what AI can't do, but I think that we would be terrified if we knew what all it could do.
I agree, but I yeah, go ahead, Debs.
I know.
Hermione Granger.
Okay, so no, it's just, you know, I like AI. I like to look into it. I look, you know, because I'm looking forward to my future companion robot, obviously. So one thing that it's having a problem with, you guys are laughing, but I'm serious. I really want one.
Yeah,
anywho,
so
one thing that's really having a problem with is learning. And that's why I was mentioning those neuromorphic computers. So they want it to learn on its own. And it's not quite there yet. Like, there is a robot that's been in service for years. And a lot of these projects are by private robot companies, of course, and others are by universities. That's really important to pay attention to, by the way, universities. But anywho, so they're trying to teach this robot to learn things on its own. And that is like so simple for us as humans, because we just teach our young and they learn and they continue. They've had to find ways to teach robots. And a lot of what they're doing is doing the action for them and then providing the robot with the data set, because it really isn't learning on its own per se yet. So that's one thing that it's not quite there yet.
What can't AI do, Courtney?
Well, I know it lies. I was back in Pennsylvania and I was listening to a local radio station about this local author. And he asked AI, it was one of the chats, because he's a writer. And so he's using it to do research. He asked it about Lenore going to Mars as, you know, this thought experiment. And the AI just starts lying, you know, about this Edgar Allan Poe, this, you know, this story that's been around forever. And the AI just starts going off the cuff. And so I learned a lot about it because I didn't know AI could just be so, you know, forthright and open about lying. And so it just makes stuff up. And so I didn't realize that. I thought it actually had to like check and proof. So I learned something about that. But one of the things that I think humans do, and this has come up in our discussion tonight, is feel compassion. You know, feel compassion. I'm not sure that you can give a machine necessarily, even AI with as advanced it is that felt sense of what it is to be human. Maybe. But I do think that we have an advantage because we're human and we have empathy and compassion built in.
Can I follow up? Even if you don't use the word compassion and you just cut it off as feel?
Sure. We feel.
Because I can't explain to you what a feeling is, because we don't know what it is. We just know that we emote, you know, like I've told these guys, you know, you go to like for people that were sort of teenagers when I was born, you know, it might have been going to see the Beatles and they would cry and stuff. And me going to U2 in the 80s when I was a high school kid and watching people tear. And the emotion. And I think we could take an AI robot and we could sit them next to me at U2 and we could program it to tear up when I start to tear up. You know, we can program the robot that when you see DJ do this and when he goes like that and when you start to see this liquid coming down his face, you do the same thing. But I think the reason that the phenomenon, some of them have come and wanted to extract this biological material to mix in with their machinery so that they can hybridize it in some way, is because they don't know how to feel. So they know we know how to feel. So if they can add that in, it can maybe change their birth rate and, you know, who knows? Well, I can only surmise, but the only thing I can think of is what we have. What we can't explain how we do it, we just do it. I don't know what a feeling is. It's a feeling. Okay, what's a feeling? Well, I can't explain it to a robot what a feeling is. You could have an AI. I can't say, oh, well, a feeling is when you feel something. Okay, what's that? Well, I don't know. But I think they know what it is. I think they value that. So I think that's what AI can't do at this, at least if I were to try to find a reason why they would want to take human biology and extract it from a man or a woman and then return them back to Earth, like maybe they did with Dan Sherman's mom.
So I don't want to scare you too much, DJ, but one of the things that DARPA was working on was impacting, and this ties back to what was said earlier, impacting people with mental health issues with implants in the brain by signaling into the brain. So again, like they're involving technology to impact feelings.
I think it's good that you brought that up. When I went to look for this organic thing, this chip, Deb, that was one of the things in the research papers that I found, that they wanted to work with people with autism on social emotional reactions to help them. So I hadn't thought of that connection either, but you just brought it up.
Can I reverse that though? The problem is not that they can interact with our brain and make us feel, because we can already feel. The problem is if we can take us and make a machine feel. That's the challenge, is the opposite of that. Now, right. Talk amongst yourselves. Somebody bring
up I just think we have to be real careful here. And something Courtney said brought up a memory. She talked about how AI lies. And it does lie. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir.
But it reminded me of something Jacques Vallée said. you know, he wasn't sure what the phenomenon was, but he was sure of one thing, that it deceives us. The phenomenon is a deceiver. And so you could call that lie. And so I think there's an analogy or similarity to be drawn between the phenomenon and AI, and the fact that they both deceive us. They are both lying to us. And so we need to be very careful what we think and what we think is being revealed to us. I want to circle back real quick on the Tic Tacs. By the way, if you want a good analysis of the Tic Tac situation, just Google Kevin Knuth. He's a physicist. Kevin Knuth paper on the Tic Tacs in the Nimitz. And you can see a physics study and let the physics and the mathematics tell you whether what you should think about it, and let that lead the way.
The entire Earth's level of energy required to propel it. I don't remember the altitude, you know, for at that velocity to propel it up to like 80,000 feet once would have been like the entire Earth's worth of energy. Like I said, there are many, many reasons why, but it's kind of like, it's very difficult for people to understand that, because if you don't understand flight and what is involved in flight, then you can see something and say, oh, sure, we could do that, because you don't understand what conventional flight, what it takes to make an airplane or a helicopter hover, is an incredibly energy consumptive process for any rotary wing aircraft, which is what the FAA defines as a helicopter, is a rotary wing, because what you're seeing are not fan blades like that are in your fan at your house. They're actually shaped like wings that create their own lift, irrespective of the fact that you have a collective that will then pitch those blades. Again, it's too much to get into because there's just too much involved in it, and I wouldn't waste the time other than to tell you that if someone says that is a U.S., a Russian, or a Chinese tech, I say, okay, bring the arbiter of truth. I'll bet my life against yours, and no one's going to take me up on that bet, because they know they don't that they won't have the either that, or they're just a fool. So anyway, let's go with topics that you guys want to talk about. Tim, you've got something. You're either scolding one of your children. Go ahead. Oh, Deb.
Go on now. Get out of here.
Yeah.
No kids with me in Roswell, but I wanted to circle back on Deb's topic earlier, and I was going to take it from a different point of view. So there's some current news, breaking news today, that this was from FOIA, okay? So the Air Force just released via FOIA some more information on this Air Force encounter over the Gulf of Mexico, and there were four UAPs involved. One of them was similar in shape and size to an Apollo craft. It was illuminated at the bottom. It was moving incredibly fast. It jammed our systems. One of the pilots managed to get a screenshot of this object. This is the encounter, by the way, that Matt Gaetz was talking about at one time. The other objects were not able to get a lock on them, but they also seemed to be jamming our systems. So this is breaking today, and you can go to Black Vault and check out more of this. But just last week, Luna, Representative Luna, who's kind of in this with Matt Gaetz on all this, she was asked about, hey, she and Matt Gaetz had a classified briefing, and somebody got tipped that perhaps they were briefed on alien bodies. So I want to know what y'all think, because I actually think that it feels like we're on the precipice of something really major being unveiled.
Okay, Hera, my cat is here. Hera, come on down, buddy.
Okay. I hear a couple different things going on with the bodies. Okay, so there's a lot of information to mull over. It's one of the least likely to get hard evidence on, which makes sense, because that would be the thing that most people would be most secretive or cautious about, right? Revealing actual bodies. Like, they just have this assumption that maybe we're not ready, you know, and that's unfair, because obviously we've survived along hominins before, other ones. So a few things. One is, obviously, Grush has mentioned biological material, right? So maybe something related to that was shown. But Jeremy Corbell says that that story about Luna is being misconstrued. And that is not exactly what happened, but there might be a grain of truth to the rumors. So I just wanted to throw that in there also for people to think about. So we don't know exactly what they saw, but I do think I have to mention, I keep going back to that Skinny Bob series on YouTube and wondering, what is the story with that? Like, why do we have those videos on YouTube with a person who's never, like, no one's ever come forward and said they made that? And it just so happened to have been put out around the time OSAP was around. No one's mentioned the connection between the timing with OSAP and those videos. So, I don't know, man. There's a lot to think about.
I'm sorry. My cat, Hera, is... she's very demanding, and when she wants to be in front of the camera. So, I just want to say how annoying it is. I can't tell you. I did a whole bunch of my flying time was at that base right next to Eglin. So we shot approaches to the same areas and used the same training areas over the Gulf, and I never saw a damn thing. So I'm so pissed that those guys saw it, and I didn't. I was at Herbert Field, which is about 5 miles from Eglin. But like I said, we both – use all those same training areas. Same
or you rate. Did see something, but you just can't tell us.
No, I mean, back then I wouldn't have said anything, obviously, you know, because you just didn't do that. At, you know, in that time you would have gotten sent to the flight dock and probably grounded. So you wouldn't be talking UFOs in the cockpit. It was extremely intimidating just going there as a rookie. You just kind of, you know, you just wouldn't do anything like that. But no, I really didn't see anything, but it would have been really cool if I did. But yeah, I don't know. Do you, I mean, you're a news junkie as well. And Courtney, you get a lot of news. Do you have anything on Gates, Luna, Gates's briefing about those craft and then the bodies more recently?
I think it's just so fascinating because we were at the hearing, a couple of us here. I know Deb was there, and we heard Gates in the open session say, break ranks and talk about classified information. At the hearing, he talked about this information that's just come out. So I think that's amazing that it's actually out now and we can look at the documents, because at the time he said, now tell me if I'm incorrect, but I remember him saying that they showed up at the entrance to the base, that they appeared. And so it sounds similar to me to what some of the other pilots testified to, that sometimes these anomalous objects show up around bases, or they show up where we're doing training runs. And so I think that's a pattern, obviously, that is intelligent. Once again, like we talked about the radar being jammed last time, it shows that there is some intelligence behind this, which to me is also another piece of proof. And so I think the interesting thing is that you're seeing the introduction, especially with Luna and Gates now, again, with these bodies potentially, and seeing a video. You know, they didn't say no, they didn't see a video. They said no comment when the reporter asked if they were shown a video, which I also think is interesting. And how do you interpret that, you know, as people who are following the news? If they would have not, they would have said, no, that's patently ridiculous. So I think it leaves the door open. And I also think that it's interesting that we're talking about bodies, because when we saw the controversy around the Santilli video so long ago, that was hotly debated and disputed, even by people like Kit Green, who came out on, I think it was Above Top Secret at the time, and he even came out and weighed in on it at the time. So here we're seeing this all kind of repackaged, repurposed, and coming out again, but it's actually in Congress. It's at a higher level. So when you hear people like Lou Elizondo, which today he came on, speaking of news, and said, hey, things are coming, you know, be aware, be tapped in. I think that this is all showing us how it's taken shape. So that's my opinion about it.
Man, what a great stitch back to the beginning of the show. I just want to say hello to a couple people. We have Timothy Mans, Goatee, how are you? Shelly, you got some interesting stuff. You're gonna have to tell us about this one. The object let us get so close before it shot up without turning
and at an angle and went into a tunnel. So you have to, we'd love to hear more about that. So please DM somebody on the show, either Debs or Courtney or Tim or myself, so that we can hear about this. And maybe we'll get you on here to talk about it. But yeah, welcome everyone. Timothy Mann, election reform or perish. All right. Everybody, we appreciate you guys being here. We only have about 5 minutes left, so let's just sort of anything that you guys want to discuss, yeah. Go around. Tim, do you want to have a parting shot or something?
Yeah, I've got a parting shot. I was really hoping to catch Dr. Kripal tonight. I'm sad he couldn't be on. But one thing I wanted to talk about, you know, and y'all were talking about this earlier, this notion of feelings, but I'm going to go beyond feelings, right? Like, it's obvious that humans have something different about us. And going back into biblical days, and for most of humankind, we've called this the soul, right? But The problem is, along with the soul comes some darker parts, right? Like, if we do indeed have a soul, and going back to biblical times, you know, go all the way back to the Ark of the Covenant, and we're dealing with other technology and certain people who could communicate with the phenomenon, and we have this notion of heaven and hell, and if you do believe in the soul, and you do believe in otherworldly beings, and you do believe that they're interested in this soul of ours, you know, I can't think of anything more hellish than passing away and my soul being part of a container somewhere for some alien races, whatever they're going to do with it. And so that's not a very happy passing thought, but, you know, it is what it is.
The only thing I'm worried about, you know, is if you and I get together in the afterlife, Tim, and me at my best, you at your best, and we play one-on-one in basketball, I know that I'm still going to get smoked, even if I'm at the best DJ I've ever been in basketball. And that's kind of concerning, because it's kind of a, you know, it'll kind of be like a repeating death if we play over and over.
So. No, it's not concerning. I'll tell you why, because I never was into this everybody gets a trophy society that we're in now. Mm-hmm. So it's good to know you're not good at something, because that enables you to pursue things you are good at, like UFO research. So I think it's good that you don't think you're good at basketball. I'll give you a great example of this. My best friends, they were in the Gong Show. We used to have the Gong Show back in the day in high school, right? It's kind of like the old school talent show. And they decided they're going to do a band. They're going to sing Who Put the Bump in the Bump Sha Bump Bump. And they got on stage. They started doing this. And everybody, I mean, the whole school, K-12, son, they're throwing stuff at the stage. They're booing. They were so humiliated. They rushed off stage, you know, hid for like a week. But at least they didn't think they were good at singing. And so they all pursued things they were good at.
Yeah, one of them turned into a NASA engineer, right? No, yeah, I think I have enough things that I'm not good at that I I already have enough humility. But Deb's a parting shot.
Yeah, I really have to mention USOs. And the reason I have to mention it is because we keep talking about examples of advanced technology. And I do not think people understand how much pressure there is in the depths of the ocean, that it really crumples most of the technology that we've tried to put down there. And we've heard some horrific examples of that in recent months that I won't get into, right? So if there's something that is capable of shooting out of the water, going up, disappearing, going into space, coming back, and going into the water again, that is definitely well advanced beyond what we can do. Like, people don't understand space is a lot less pressure. Just to throw it out there, Darcy Beer has a new USO documentary, and I plan on watching it soon.
And when's he coming on, Debs?
Oh, you know, you're gonna make me go look at the calendar.
No, April 3rd. I was hoping you were gonna promo it. April 3rd.
Yeah, and I'm happy that he's going to come talk to us about that. And by the way, apparently Science Bob saw a USO. Just throwing that out there too.
Dude, Science Bob, man. That brother's had paranormal. Yeah, I think the only thing he hasn't had is Bigfoot. But other than that, he's seen everything. So, Darcy, we got a link. He said that to get with his promo, his ad agency. I'm trying to think of public relations, whatever. They'll give us the link so we can watch it in advance of him coming on. Courtney, a parting shot, my friend.
Yeah, well, I was getting prepared. I was going back and refamiliarizing myself with some of Dr. Kripal's work. You know, I saw him and met him for the first time down in Houston at the Archives of the Impossible, which was just an incredible, incredible conference. You know, everybody was there, all the thought leaders. And so I was reading his book, The Flip, again, rereading it. And I picked up something that he starts talking about really early on called cosmic mindedness, this bigger cosmic mind that's intelligent that we have access to, right, through our spirit or through our own mind or however. And it stood out to me because I was thinking about that, like consciousness and this whole, you know, this whole AI debate that we're having. And so, you know, what makes us human, I think I'm just going to go into some of my own research for my PhD, which is on near-death experiences. And so one of the things that I think when you're looking at these patterns about the soul and these frightening things that come up, like we've heard about, you know, where these ET, one theory is that they're taking our souls and putting them in these containers and somehow controlling our spirit. I look to the near-death research because most of these people who go and pass over to the other side and have clinical death, it's very similar. They either see a guardian or a deity or a god or some feel this huge expansiveness or even an ancestor when they come back into this physical reality. And so I always think to myself, well, while that also might be true, we have this body of research from these individuals who have gone on to the other side and have sovereignty over their own spirit and even whether they want to come back here. So that's one counterpoint that I use against the ship with the bodies, you know, or the souls in the container.
In the container, the mason jars.
We're more than just a meat suit. So that's yeah. My parting shot. And I do think we have the ability to connect to this cosmic mindedness. And if AI does have a purpose, maybe that will help us in that way. Be a bridge through breakthrough science. That would be pretty cool. That would be an advantage.
Isn't the fact that we even reach out to the cosmos and try to understand these things and try to go into space an example of how special humans are and something that might attract the attention of other intelligences? Yeah, just throwing that out there.
Most certainly. And it also may have been the Trinity, you know, explosions in New Mexico. And what year was that? Was that like 43? I can't remember now. But yeah, no, there's a lot of reasons. I know, like the Neil deGrasse Tyson thing, I won't even address because, you know, I don't need to address like that kind of small-minded idiocy. I don't care, you know, how many degrees he has. It's not the thing. And in fact, tonight, you know, we were going to have a PhD, but we got 1.5 PhDs in its place. So right now, I think we're up by half a PhD. So, but Dr. Kripal, we love you. You were so very, very kind last time that you were on, especially with Matt's story that he was telling. And we really look forward to you coming here shortly. So Shelly Montgomery here. And if you could read this one, Courtney, it's on the screen.
This here. Okay, I thought it was a private chat. I'm oriented times three. I want to tell you guys something else I found interesting. Okay, well, let's share. Let's share about it.
All right, Shelly, DM one of us. And let's figure out what this is before my cat destroys the computer. Hera, my cat, the Black Panther that I call her, is now behind the computer. Her face is right next to the screen, and it's only going to be a moment before she does something to upset the entire show. For my parting shot, I just want to say thank you to everybody. Money Nathan, we missed you tonight. Lou certainly brought a lot of eyeballs to the show tonight. Probably hit a record for us, and that's including Lou's first appearance and Jim Semivan's appearance. But let's see, what do we got next? What do we got next up, Debs? Is it Terry Wendell? Do we have Bigfoot next?
I'm pulling up the calendar. It's happening right now.
Yeah.
I just want to say, DJ, you're very brave to sit with someone named Hera. You know.
Yeah.
She's just violent. She's got a violent reputation. I mean.
She is an absolute monster.
Calypso. She is a monster. tropical island. I mean, you know, you've got to be fierce to sit in her company.
Yeah, she is extremely, extremely demanding of in my five pet family. She's quite unique. But anyway, now don't eat the screen.
March 13th. Hera,
what's that, the 13th?
Yeah, okay, March 13th. Right. Arlo Williams and Terry Wendell.
Yeah, so before we get into that, I appreciate everybody stopping by. If you would take the time, we are not monetized. If you would just give us a like or give us a subscribe on YouTube or Twitter, we would greatly appreciate that. So Tim right here is the host of All Things Unexplained. They have a great show along with fellow former educators. Actually, Smitty is still an educator in Mississippi. And CJ is a former educator and mom. And Tim, who, you know, has a mohawk and needs hair gel. So there's that. And has a very low body fat percentage. Courtney and Debs have anomalous debates. We're hoping that some of you guys are going to be... Oh, now she's reaching out for the printer. So she's going to see if maybe she can knock the printer off. But Courtney and Debs have the show called Anomalous Debates. They are waiting for people who have argued but want to settle down into a Lincoln Douglas format debate. They haven't told me if they're going to let me give them a judge or not for the debate.
I submitted a proposal for that, by the way.
I forgot. Yeah, Tim has stepped up to the plate. I forgot.
Yes,
awesome.
I will tell you about that, Courtney. I will tell you. Don't worry.
All right. So we will be back. Our next show is going to be Bigfoot related. We're having on a prolific habituator from Oklahoma, Arla Williams, and her friend from Terry Wendell from Rock Hill Bigfoot in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And Terry has been out to Arla's property. We actually, you know them separately, but Arla is quite legendary for people who have had experiences on her property over the course of many years. So that'll be coming up next. So thank you, everybody. I appreciate you guys coming in and hanging out while Dr. Kripal couldn't be here. Nathan, one love. And to all you guys out there, Julie, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm babbling. No, that's me. But yeah, I know Hera is just going to she wants to destroy something. Julie, thank you very much for getting out of the car and coming in to do this. We love and appreciate you. And we'll see you soon. So for Tim, for Debs, for Courtney, this is DJ saying peace out. One love. We'll see you down the road. And as always, we're wondering what's up around the bend.
Hey, Unexplained Ones, are you ready for your next adventure? Then look no further than UFO Watchtower in Hooper, Colorado. Experience the wonder of the cosmos with guided tours, skywatching events, and firsthand accounts of their over 300 UFO sightings. Whether you're a seasoned ufologist or just curious, the UFO Watchtower welcomes you to explore the mysteries of the universe. They are currently open on weekends for tours or during the week for camping. Give them a call at 719-378-2296 to book your trip today.